return you now to your regularly scheduled program.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Martin.
And I'm Marty Hite.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome to the Tattoos and Jesus Podcast.
I am very happy to be here!
Here at TNJ, we seek to blend the righteous with the ridiculous.
Please explain.
We discuss coffee, counseling, Christianity, and whatever else crosses our mind.
We hope you enjoy.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of your favorite Tattoos and Jesus podcast. We got another old school session today. We may actually have a few more of these now that Josh abandoned ship over here where I work and went to a new job. But we brought out the headsets and are jumping on Zoom today. Joshua, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. You know, just we're in October. We are officially...
You state the obvious here.
And... some of the best weather ever. Like every day I want to sit outside, open the door, hang out.
I have a question.
Got a golf trip next weekend.
Are you wearing a pink shirt right now?
Yeah, it's pink day.
It's pink day.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Josh's world or in like everybody else's world?
Homecoming week.
Oh, that's cute, man. You're assimilating to the culture.
You should have seen me Monday. It was Jersey day. I wore my...
Oh, my goodness.
Clippers. I wore my Clippers. Thornwell jersey.
Were people impressed by you?
No. But, you know, tomorrow's twin day. I don't have a twin, so I'm just going to wear the Dorman freshman campus shirt they give me and then hope somebody else wears it and just roll with it.
I'm twinning with anyone who wears this shirt.
But so Friday's Adam Sierra Sandler should, day.
You and Sierra should match.
Yeah, she's at the main campus, though. Oh. Nobody will see us.
Adam Sandler day?
Yeah, but I don't really know. Like, I feel like that's just like regular clothes.
That,
like,
no, it's oversized shorts, oversized athletic shorts, and an oversized athletic t-shirt.
I'm not wearing an oversized athletic shirt.
That, so but that is Adam Sandler.
I feel like that's a little much. I might go with a different style. Wedding singer. I'm going to come in with a tux.
Okay. There was something that happened. So this past weekend... I was in Talladega. I went to Talladega for the race.
Same.
Oh, yeah. Listen, like we've talked about on the show in the past, like I'm a huge Dirty Mo Media fan, Dale Jr.'s Media Line, and he's got a podcast on their Door Bumper Clear. I ate breakfast with one of the co-hosts from Door Bumper Clear in Cracker Barrel Saturday.
First of all, don't try to hype yourself up like this is some kind of glorious story. Like, let's give them the real version, okay? Let's give them the real version of the story.
Yeah. He's probably my favorite character on the show. He's my favorite co-host. There's three co-hosts. He's probably my favorite because he's really funny, but he's got a really good head on his shoulders. His observations are pretty spot on. And he was, I was sitting there eating breakfast with my dad, and there's race team people all around because we're near the track. It's Saturday morning, so I can see like different people representing different, you know, companies that I'm familiar with. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And I look back and I'm like, that's freaking Freddie Kraft eating breakfast 20 feet from me. He's there for probably 15 minutes after we sit down, and then he finishes, and he walks right next to me. And you know what I did?
Please tell us.
Absolutely nothing.
Panicked. You panicked. This is what we call
a
panic.
I panicked. I think about – I was like, man, I'm just going to shake his hand and be like, Freddie, it's nice to meet you. Because on the show, he's even said, we love it when fans, like, you know, don't feel like you can't talk to us. Like, say hey. We enjoy it. Like, I had it. He was right there. Didn't do it.
That's unfortunate.
I know.
You had a moment of.
I could have hugged the man. I could have hugged him. You might have taken a photo with him.
You may not ever see him again in your life.
May not. I don't know. When we're at the podcast awards ceremony.
Yeah, since that's a real thing.
But it was fun. It was so much fun. I mean, Talladega is a massive track, 2.66 miles. It was a fun experience. It was a bucket list item. My dad flew in, picked him up. Went to Alabama, spent a couple days. We stayed in Birmingham, I think, one night. Went downtown to find some food. That was sketchy.
I thought Birmingham was nice.
Not the part we were in. I think it was Birmingham. I don't know. It may have been Montgomery. I don't remember. I'd have to look it up.
One of them's nice.
One of them is nice.
I don't remember what. Yeah.
So.
But. Okay. Who won?
Ryan Blaney.
Oh, okay.
So you know who that is, don't you?
Yeah.
What color is his
He's number
car?
12. He's number 12. He's got a
You're
green car.
Googling it right now, aren't
No,
you?
I just guess. What is it?
It's 12. His number's
No, it's
12.
not. You're
I
full of me.
promise.
You're full of crap.
No, what color is his car? Guess.
I just said green. I don't know
Green?
either.
No.
Yeah.
Google him, Rhyme
It's
Lady.
he's 12.
I promise you
Dang,
he's
I should have
12.
played that off
And he
before.
drives a yellow car.
I'm colorblind.
Which green is like the kissing cousin to yellow. Like they go together. You were close.
I don't even know how to spell this guy's name. Oh, that's
Ryan?
close.
You don't know how to spell Ryan?
Yeah, we're good.
Ryan.
Ford
Number
number
12.
12. Oh, look at
He's a
that.
funny dude. I really
Yeah, I
like
knew.
him. Like, I'm not a big Ford guy, but I really like Ryan. So I was happy for that. That was cool. Listen to this. Here, I got a couple funny stories for you. Turn this. All right, I'm going to tell you a couple funny stories. One from the racetrack and two from my son. And then I need you to spiritualize them. All
So
right.
we got three stories total.
Real fast. Like, I went to two races. The first race was a truck race. It's on Saturday. So it's just a lower tier series. After the race, now I didn't see this firsthand. I saw a video of it later. One of the drivers apparently goes up to another driver after the race. He was mad, taps him on the shoulder. The dude turns around, lays him out.
I saw that on
You
ESPN.
see, yeah, you see the video.
The
Dude's
bloody brawl.
blood covering his face. Nick Sanchez is his name. I hate that I missed that, but that was down in the garage. Like, I couldn't have seen that if I wanted to. Anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. Like, it's not every day. Like, there's a lot of time. You see this in all sports that people like to run their mouth. I'm gonna get that guy. I'm gonna knock him out. You wait till I see him. If I saw him right now, nah, Matt Crafton don't play. This man changes clothes. So he's just in street clothes. So Nick probably didn't even notice him because he's out of his fire suit, not, just walks up to the dude, kind of grabs his shoulder, pulls him around, lays him out. Now, in return, Matt Crafton got a $25,000 fine.
That'll do it. That'll do it.
So that speaks to how much money they're making, that the fine is 25 grand.
The fine is literally
Like,
half of most people's salary.
that's right. But let me tell you these two stories of my son Charlie. My son Charlie, who had today's picture day. Right. And so I'm gonna send you a picture right now. I mean, for y'all listening, y'all are missing out on this. But today's picture day, and check out this outfit. This man is big pimping. I just sent you the photo. I want you to pull this photo up and I want you to tell me what this man looks like. When my wife sent me this photo, I about started crying laughing. Do you
Oh
get
my gosh, yeah.
it? This
He kind of
man,
looks like an actor, but I can't remember. I don't know who he is. But he
Chris
literally
Farley?
looks no.
Because
He looks like
I texted my wife a response. Let me see if you have the same observation as me.
I'm gonna be honest. He looks exactly dressed like you.
Like me?
Yeah. He's got the flannel.
He
He's
does have
got
a
the
flannel.
khakis.
Got
He's got
some
the
khakis.
shoes.
I don't wear those shoes.
Yeah.
This man
Yeah,
is
you do.
wearing.
You have those brown shoes that you wear
I don't wear them
sometimes.
that much. This man is wearing a khaki pants, like leather dress shoes and an untucked plaid button up.
He looks mad, is what he looks
He
like.
does look mad, but you know what I sent my wife? I
What?
said, that boy looks like a vacuum cleaner salesman.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Does he not?
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, Charlie,
You should post this picture in our podcast.
he comes up with like the funniest crap sometimes. And so like he has such a tender heart. Like we tell him all the time, like you got a big heart, like not in a medical sense, but like you got a big heart and big brains. He's smart, he thinks, but he's real tender. Like he's just a sweet little fella. He loves people. Right? Never met a stranger. Like he'll walk up to anybody and be like, "You want to be my family?" Right? And so I guess, I mean, you adopt the kid and like his concept of who could be family is like anyone he loves. If he loves
Yeah.
you, he brings you in as a cousin. So we've
Yeah.
got lots of family members, but he's also learning a lot about God, Jesus, like belief systems. And so like sometimes he has a hard time wrapping his mind around it. And so he'll come up with some like deep theological statements that are like through the mind of a 7-year-old, which he turns 8 in like 11 days. Right, so he's almost 8 years old, and so he comes up with this stuff, and it's like, that's, I don't think you should say that out loud again, Charlie.
Don't say it out loud.
That's right. So
Okay.
last week he walks in, and he said, I can't wait to die. I want to die.
Yeah, that's probably a red flag. Risk
And
assessment.
Ashley and I are standing in the bathroom. We stop everything we do, and we turn around. And we're like, what did you just say? He said, yeah, I want to die. And we said, why? Like, where's, and he's happy about it. Like, there's no depression. He's excited about this announcement. I am looking forward to my death. And I'm like, is this Paul? I mean, I feel like this is a little Paul right here. Paul in the Old New Testament, he was very excited about dying, right? To live as Christ and die as gain. I was like, we've got a little spiritual prodigy here. And he goes, but so we were like, Charlie, why would you say that? And he goes, well, think about it. By the time I'm old enough to die, like, you guys will for sure be dead. And he said, and I'll be really excited to see you guys in heaven.
So he just goes ahead and kills everybody off.
He's like, and so in his head, he's like, by the time I'm old enough to die, he said, my parents are definitely gone.
But then, did you ask him what age he was thinking about? Because his age is probably like 25.
Right. 32.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good question. I should have asked him that. And so he was like, yeah, you guys, and I'll be really excited to see you. And I'll see Bumpa, you know, his grandpa that's passed away. And we were like, that is really sweet, Charlie. Let's be careful about saying that.
Yeah. Walking into class.
And then when I'm in Alabama, I get a text from my wife that Charlie's outside and he likes to ride his skateboard. He's outside riding his skateboard. Another theological distortion here. He's riding his skateboard and he falls over and he just, you know how you like, if you just like get road rash or whatever, well, like the side of his calf and his knee kind of slid on the concrete. So you can imagine it just tore up his leg. It was bleeding and stuff. It was hurting him. So he falls and he's crying or whatever. And my wife goes over to check on him and he goes, that hurt like hell. And she goes, excuse me? 'Cause, like, we don't say that. Like, where did you get that? Instantly, we're like, who's saying questionable language around my son? And he's like, that hurt like hell. And he's like, no, like, it just burns really bad. And hell burns. So I was just trying to tell you that it hurts. You know, it's just burning. And I'm like, again, deep thought. Deep concept here. Let's shape up how we use it. Let's.
Yeah. Like, so there's two statements there that could easily get him trouble at school.
100%. 100%, because he, in no way, shape, or form do I think he has heard someone and registered, this is questionable language or something, I'm just going to use it. Which he has done before, right? Like, he gave us the middle finger one day, having no clue what he was doing.
That's what I'm talking about.
That was funny. But yeah. Then we talked about that. This was not that moment. I think he was just like, in his childlike state, trying to wrap his mind around concepts and then just using it in his everyday vernacular. And so, fair. So far in the last 2 weeks, he's looking forward to his death because he'll get to see us. And he equates hell with burning, which I guess is the common stereotype, and said, that's a great metaphor for how my leg is feeling right now.
Well, I mean, and it fits perfectly into how it's actually used when it's not a metaphor.
It just happened to work.
So it's kind of like that whole, like, I'm asleep, but I'm praying. Like, you know, you could get away with that. You can get away with that.
Anyway, yeah. What?
Well, that's
my spiritual depth for the week.
It actually brings up a really good point.
Is this a bad segue I'm about to listen to?
No. Cheese pizza. The thought was a little bit of both and here.
Yes.
Of theology and psychology or counseling or whatever.
Oh, speaking of both and, can I do a shameless plug real quick?
Sure.
I'm just going to say it. We're going to move on with your both and. You had mentioned that Francis Chan wrote the book Unity a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if you said it on the podcast, or I think you may have mentioned to it off the podcast, or it may have been on Jimmy's, but I listened to that book on audio while I drove to and from Alabama this weekend. Francis Chan has gotten a lot of heat over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to stand here and say that book, I think, embraces things that we have discussed personally and also on the podcast better than we've ever discussed it.
Yeah.
I'm agree. a massive fan of the book and how he tries to balance how can we create unity amongst believers but not compromise on the beliefs themselves. And a lot of people that are kind of more hardcore in their doctrines and beliefs continue to kind of bash and have problems with him. I'm going to stand here and tell him that, number one, I was thinking that stuff. You and I have talked about it before he came out with the book. Mm-hmm. But I fully endorse that book as a beautiful approach to how can we create more unity as believers instead of dissension. Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing book. Great recommendation, Joshua.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. It's top notch.
If you somebody that's frustrated when you feel like there's just constant dissent, right? And don't get me wrong, maybe we've contributed to that at times. It's not our intent, but sometimes it does happen. Yeah. But if you're like, hey, you know, how can we all get along better? I think Francis handles that wonderfully.
Yeah, I agree.
So
he does a really good job. He's got a lot of good trainings or videos or stuff that kind of goes along with that. That's been good.
All right, let's bounce back now to your both and comment. What you got for me?
So little theology, little psychology, you know, the perfect tattoos and Jesus combo here. I was struck with a question this week through work and research combined. And I want to know your initial thoughts about the question, and then I'll kind of backtrack to a couple more things. And actually, one of them actually ties into your story with Charlie.
Okay. Let me have it.
First question. Can perfection be obtained in the spiritual life? So can we be perfect? Not will we be perfect. Can we be perfect?
Like, is it possible? Is the option even there? We're not even saying anyone's ever done it. You're just saying
perfection. Yes.
Does the Bible almost present in such a way that a person could obtain spiritual perfection prior to death?
Right. Exactly. Is it possible? First question. Thoughts, comments.
First, my gut response.
Yeah.
I guess my gut answer is yes for periods of time, but not for all time.
Okay.
Like, it's not like one day the person's sanctification crosses over and they are permanently sinless and perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Henceforth until death. But my gut says there are windows of time which, through maturity and sanctification becoming more like God, can become larger windows of time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So there are times perfection is possible and reached to a certain way.
I you're throwing me off the word perfection, like perfection or sinlessness. What's
the difference in your mind? And then I'll tell you.
Well, I guess to be perfect. Okay. Well, I guess we have to define it. Like, what is sin and what is perfection in this situation?
Right.
Because to me, sin is. So I Googled this earlier because I knew we were kind of diving into this trail. Sin is rebellion against God and his plan for me,
mm-hmm.
or humanity, right? General sin, specific sin, whatever. It's rebellion against his order, purpose, and who he is. Is that a fair
mm-hmm.
summarization?
Sure.
Perfection, though, would be becoming like God. Like, I could not be sinless, but I could be sinless, but still not God. Perfect would be like I am acting as God on God level. Like he is. Is that, am I being too dramatic there? Is that, like, I think a person could live sinlessly, but that doesn't mean they're like,
I don't think you're God necessarily, but it's like a quality of God. You become, yeah. you obtain a quality of God.
In like life. I would say they could have a perfect moment, a perfect period of time. I guess I could stick with the same answer. A perfect period of time where their heart is attuned to the things God wants them to be attuned to. They resist the things God would not have them be a part of. They engage in behaviors that honor God, and they reject behaviors that we would consider sinful or inappropriate. Is that? Yeah, I'll go with yeah. Yeah. That I mean, no, they don't become God. They're not God in that moment. I mean, don't be clear, but like they could have a window of time, a period of time.
Can you? So let me. With that,
I feel like you're setting me up, to be honest.
It feels like it really does feel like a setup, but it's not, I promise.
Huh.
It's
what my first girlfriend told me. I'm just kidding. I don't, that makes no sense.
It makes no sense. Okay. Okay. Can we become?
Yeah.
This is gonna be a tough one. Can we only become Jesus in a way. So are there moments that we become Christ?
Yes.
So in your answer, at times, in those times, are we like Christ?
I think in those moments, to the best of our ability, our best of our capabilities, right? Because we're limited based on who we are, right? Like, we're not becoming somebody different. But I think we have maximized to its fullest potential being a conduit of Christ in our hands and feet, in our actions, behaviors, beliefs. I think we are fully, if you could say, fully in line with channeling Jesus through the Holy Spirit in that moment. Yes.
But channeling in the sense of
being fully filled with, empowered by
same Christ.
No, not the same level. Like, you can't be somebody else. You can only be under the influence of that person.
Okay.
Because if you believe that Jesus was fully God and fully man, I'm just fully man. So even stop.
Are you?
Yes. And
well,
so
this is why I say this. Because Christ gives this is the wrestle that I have that I need your clarity on.
Okay.
Christ commands we be perfect as him and the Father are perfect.
Yes.
So is Christ saying we can become him? Number one. Number two is, what does that look like? So I think the definition, because I think it's, for me, I think it's possible if he's commanding it. I don't think God's going to give him a command that we can't reach or we can't obtain. You don't give somebody a goal that you can't obtain.
Yeah. And that's a good point, because a lot of people will use that verse, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And I think there's some other verses too that I've read recently. And some people have tried to case that in the understanding of, but this also includes like the ultimate sanctification that comes in glory, right? Post-death. But if you read the context, there's some earthly commands tied in there that it doesn't seem like he's speaking of an eternal reality as much as he's also speaking of an earthly reality.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yep. So thank you for clarification of my mosh posh. So there's an earthly.
What verse is that? Do you know? Statement.
Somewhere in John.
All right. Keep going.
I think. There's an earthly reality to perfection. So I think acknowledging, because I see this in my own life, spiritual life, but you can also see this in counseling a little bit, where if the possibility of reaching perfection in the terms that it's currently in is there, then motivation is there to pursue it, usually. But if you have a goal that is already set up that you know you're not going to reach, then it kind of zaps motivation. So then I started thinking about, we've talked about this before on the podcast, the original sin doctrine, where we're predisposed to sin regardless. Yeah. Like, we're always going to make sinful choices. Doctrine's debated. People may or may not like that, but doctrine's debated. We're in a condition or a state to where we are always sin. We're always going to choose sin because that's who we are until salvation.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought was, I personally don't think that doctrine lines up with two things. One is that verse. Now, it can line up with that verse because, you know, everybody's like, well, you can reach perfection because you now have Christ. I get that. But then if you go back, and this was my first question to you yesterday, did God create Adam predisposed to sin? Like, God created somebody to choose things that were not him. Or did Adam have the free will and the free choice to either choose good or choose evil? Mm-hmm. And then based off of his choice, that influence just carried over.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not necessarily.
So this is part of. I mean, you're dealing in some deep waters here. And I wouldn't consider ourselves theological geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
But you're dealing with, all right, was there a difference pre-fall and post-fall, right? So Genesis, what is that, 3? Is that the fall? Yeah. Is there a difference in man's capacity prior to that. And now I understand that generally accepted is there was a difference to our standing with God after chapter 3, right? Like we were in right standing with God and then we were not in right standing with God. That's a generally, is that you with me there?
Yeah.
Like there's a fall. And so there's, but did our fundamental capacity change? And I don't know any, I don't know that there's like a right answer here because I don't think anybody actually knows because there's no eyewitness accounts of that time really. So I guess my gut has always been, my tendency has always been to say God didn't create free choice, the ability to choose, but also his like sovereign presence after the fall. If God is who he has always been, if we apply the principles of God that we generally hold to be true and that he is consistent and true, then those principles were there from Genesis 1:1. They just may not have been exposed till later on. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But I think my stance has always been that the temptation that happens in chapter 3, whether you view it as a literal event or a metaphor of what happened in humanity, was not that it was created, it was that it was exposed. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. In the same way that like we have temptations, like we have the capacity for sin. J.D. Greer once said in a verse, it's one of my favorite quotes of all times, and that is, the seed of every sin and is in the heart of every man. If there is a sin that you do not struggle with, be thankful, not judgmental, that the circumstances of your life have not watered that seed. Mm-hmm. But the seed of every sin is in the heart of every man, right? And so you could take that. I think he's a reformed dude. So you could take that as like, is he alluding to like, you know, ultimate depravity or something? But I think the point is this. You and I have the capacity for sin in ways that we're not even aware of. Mm-hmm. But because we're not aware of it, it's dormant. It's not, and if it never gets watered, if it never gets fertilized, it will remain dormant. And from our perspective, it is outside of our awareness. We are clueless to its reality. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It would take something illuminating that reality for us to say, oh, that exists. It exists in me. And part of me is kind of curious about it.
Yeah.
And I've always used the example of when I worked at Chick-fil-A, they came out with a banana pudding milkshake. I've used this example on the show before. I love banana pudding. I didn't know that I could love a banana pudding milkshake, but then it was created and without even tasting it, I was tempted because it awakened a desire that I didn't previously even know existed. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so I actually chose not to eat one because even in knowing it existed, it was tempting. I worked at Chick-fil-A. I could have had one of those bad boys for free every day. That would have not been good for the calorie count. And so it's like, if I know the temptation is this strong without having one, if I taste and see that it is good, that only makes it maybe an irresistible temptation. You see this a lot in drug use. You listen to the testimony of substance users and they're like, I had zero temptation. This drug was not even a thought in my mind until it was. And then it took over. And if I would have never went down this road, it would have never been exposed. It would have never defined my life. It would have never been even a thought in my mind. And so my general belief is that Adam always had the capacity, but it wasn't until Satan illuminated it that this dangerous curiosity developed that led him to engage in the temptation. In the words of Jimmy, that was a long story long. But that's so...
Took everything I was gonna say.
Did I?
I literally have. I was gonna.
You told me you were gonna disagree with me.
Because I thought you were going a different route. That's perfect. Because what you're saying, you may not want to come out and say it fully, but what you're saying is,
what are you trying to pull me out of the closet on here?
What you're saying is, you don't necessarily believe in original sin. Because the exposure to something that you can choose is different than automatically being created to choose it. So there's freedom.
Well, that's the thing is I think Adam had the capacity to say no.
Yes.
But he didn't.
He did not.
But in that moment, because he had not engaged in sin, he was still in right standing with God. Because I think that's an important difference, too, is, you know, in Scripture, it talks about Jesus. It says he was tempted with all of the same things that we are tempted with as humans, right? Literally, the very first act of Jesus' ministry after turning water to wine is like he goes to the desert for 40 days. The temptation of Jesus is the title of that. That's one thing we have to realize is temptation is never sin. Mm-hmm. Engaging and then living out that temptation is. Mm-hmm. And so Adam and Eve were sinless, right? There was sinlessness because they had not engaged in this behavior, but they allowed it to take root. And there's even verses in, was it 1 Corinthians or somewhere? It kind of talks about that building up of when temptation takes root. It gives birth to desire, and desire gives birth, blah, 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 blah. It gives forth death is the end of it. Yeah, I think I don't know how that contradicts original sin or whatnot. I'm not that good on it. But like, I think the ability was there. It's just prior to that moment, his choices and his desires aligned with Christ. But when tempted, he chose to pursue his own desires and broke eternal fellowship with Christ.
Yeah.
Am I shooting myself in the religious foot here?
No, I think you're spot on.
Do we need? That's my fear. Anytime you say it's spot on, I have read.
Look, trust me, because if you flip the opposite of what you're saying, it's exactly what people kind of disagree with, which is Adam was sinless and with God, and he chose sin. He was not predisposed to sin, and he chose it. In the same way, we are influenced by sin, even pre-salvation. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we still have the free choice to choose God or things of God.
And I think the right choice was the easiest for Adam, and it's become harder for everybody since then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes back to your – you actually sent this in a text a little bit ago, and you just mentioned it. But we all are one choice away from sin. We just may not have been exposed to it. Mm-hmm. So if you look at cultural upbringings, if you look up your family environment, if you look up your friends, if you look up, like, we are being molded to certain sins, you could say, that we can choose or not choose. Mm-hmm. And we're not tempted to go out and shoot anybody.
Speak for yourself.
But, well, yeah, true. But somebody else might be because their environment is creating that for them.
That's a good point. If you grew up in the inner city with a lot of gang activity,
right,
or and even violence, or if you grew up in another country where that's a good point. Yeah. Or if you grow up in the freaking country and grabbing a shotgun and taking care of your business is what you do,
right? Like you're molded by your environment, which I think, you know, the serpent in the garden can play a big part of that. Like you know, you're molded by the things around you. Outside circumstances are influencing your inner choices.
Right. Like if they'd have never entertained the serpent.
Yeah.
If they'd have never allowed themselves to be entertained by that discussion.
Yes.
That thought would have never been planted. That,
right.
You know, that makes me think, I'll try to protect the identities of all involved here. But I was talking to a teenager recently. And he was talking about, you know, I deal with a lot of teenagers, and he was talking about how prevalent like marijuana use is. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, you know, kind of the pros and cons, like what are some of the risk factors of choosing to hang out with a crowd that normalizes that. And one of the points that he made was, he's like, yeah, but my friends respect each person's decision. They would never try to force anyone to make that. And so he said, I'm not worried about being in that environment because I don't think there's pressure. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, poor child. What? It makes sense when you say it. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But what you don't realize is what you're around is what appears normal. What appears normal appears tempting. Mm-hmm. And you will ultimately still choose to. And then even feel good about it because you're like, they didn't pressure me to do it. I chose to do it because they normalized it. Mm-hmm. But if you would have hung out with a crowd that said that is behavior we do not condone, my guess is in the same way that they say, but we respect your decisions, over time you would have been influenced by their positive moral code and decide, I also do not want to do this and do not condone it. Because ultimately, especially as a teenager, you are most susceptible to the influence of your peer group.
Yeah, agreed. 100%.
And so if they wouldn't have entertained the idea.
Yeah, because it wasn't – it what. Because here's my thought. Without the serpent, they don't choose.
Because it's not a choice. It's not even awareness.
Right.
The standard has been created. We do.
It is the tree of good and evil. So there is a choice when you walk up, but you're not influenced.
Yeah.
There's a choice, but you're not influenced one way.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, that kind of comes to play now, where you may be influenced one way. And I think that's the point of like sin. It's not that we as humans are ingrained with sin, our hearts are sin, our minds are sin. We're just molded by sin, but we still have the free choice to not choose it. You see this all the time. Literally wrote this down. You made the perfect example, of course, you know, whatever.
And you're talking about believers.
Addictions. Yeah. Or non-believers. I even believe that for non-believers.
They can choose not to engage in that behavior.
Yeah, they can choose righteousness. They can choose things of God. They can choose, like that's the rub, is that people, there's this mindset, and this is where it's going to get into counseling a little bit. There's this mindset that we're predisposed in our hearts and our minds to sin, and all of our choices are going to be sinful.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, we are being molded by maybe sinful environments, sinful.
But could you all?
And we still have a free choice of good and evil. Like yeah. We are all Adams and Eves facing the tree every day.
Mm-hmm.
And based off of our influences, just like the serpent has, is going to be based off of, is God influencing more or is the serpent influencing more?
But can you really, okay, so if I've entered into a relationship with Christ and I feel like I'm in a relationship with Christ, the Holy Spirit indwells within me and is shaping me, not only do I continue to be able to choose right from wrong,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also being healed
mm-hmm.
on the deeper levels.
Mm-hmm.
The condition of my heart is being mm-hmm. shaped. Whereas I would say an unbeliever, it's like, yes, can they still choose on a surface level, right from wrong, good from bad? And honestly, I think that's part of the way that God reveals himself to humanity is the fact that there's moral code written on everyone. You know, you go to any place in this entire world, and even without the existence of an understanding of God, there are general principles at play in every single culture, right? Murder is generally frowned upon.
Generally,
you know,
yes.
There are moral codes that exist. Like, it's part of God's, I think, general revelation to humanity. But I could also make the statement, though, is if you're not in a relationship with Christ, yes, you can make right and wrong decisions. But you could argue the deeper levels are still tainted. Like what's the motive behind that? Like, yes, you're making mm-hmm. right decisions, and maybe it's because you think, well, because being a good moral person makes me in right relationship with Christ. Well, I think that goes against Scripture,
mm-hmm.
right? We're insufficient to become. It's by His shed blood that we receive. Mm-hmm. So the actions look similar, and on a surface level, you're right. Like, they're not sinning in action, or they may be not even sinning in mental state. Like, they could be pushing against those things, but what's the motive behind it?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, yes, could they choose not to sin? Yes, but that doesn't put them in right relationship with God.
No,
that doesn't create salvation for them.
Doesn't
it just
create salvation.
Creates a less sinful life for them.
Yeah, it doesn't create salvation, but it's a choice of righteous things,
yeah,
or godly things. So the way that it's kind of like a free will theory, where when an infant is born, an infant is not born already fully tainted heart. Whereas the original sin belief is when an infant is born, their heart is already fully sinful. So that's the rub. Not necessarily Adam, but if you bring it into reality where it's like baby's born tomorrow, they're predisposed already to choose sin right off the bat, regardless.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know that that's necessarily true. Like I said, it's a different view. But if you, I see like a new infant more as Adam in the garden.
In the garden. Here's where I struggle too. I was looking at a verse this morning.
Choices come.
And it says, without the law, sin does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is the law that creates the standard to allow us to know that sin exists.
Mm-hmm.
And so do I think use a newborn child, like, or you could even talk about, you know, these Aborigines on a foreign island,
right,
somewhere, talked about, you know, these different sects and groups and people,
mm-hmm.
like, common argument. How can God send those people to hell? Like, does his standard change based on how the law is present? And so in an infant, the law is absent in their life because they're not, you know, and that almost touches a little bit on, like, I think the Presbyterians kind of come up with this idea of, like, an age of accountability,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't fully understand that doctrine because I think they've kind of just created a doctrine that makes sense to them a little bit, but they tend to be pretty theologically rigorous. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt a little bit, but like the capacity for sin, right? Are they born, like, yes, you are not in, you're not saved, and then you become old enough to become unsaved.
Right.
But I have a little bit of a problem, too, of, like, I have a hard time thinking that, you know, in those situations that they're at a place where the law can be held against them individually.
Right. Because they don't know.
Right. And I get, in Scripture, there's a universality to it. Like, through one man, sin entered into all men,
mm-hmm.
men and women. And then through one Savior, grace and justification and forgiveness, it comes, right? Romans chapter 5. But then there's also an individual piece to that. And so even though I believe, yes, sin and brokenness enters humanity, but I also know that there's an individual side of that where we are all held accountable for the lives that we live. And I feel like if you're not mentally able to receive that law, you're telling me God's love can't meet that level?
Yeah.
You know, Francis Chan in the book Unity talks about a friend of his who works with mentally handicapped children and how he questioned, these people can't receive the love of God. They can't comprehend it. And he was struck by this concept. You're telling me that God didn't have to stoop who he was for us to understand his love? Right, as us finite beings, and you don't think he can also make his love receivable by those who have additional limitations?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't even know if that answers your question. I'm done. I'm done with that.
No,
thought.
I think it's good because we'll move on to kind of we'll clarify what we just talked about, and then we'll kind of move on to what the original question and why I think it's important.
Okay,
and the clarification of the first half is every Christian who faces the original sin doctrine has to face certain things that come with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this in other people's lives, and I see this in the counseling room. If there's a belief that original sin is passed on by the, just think about it like as in, you don't have a choice. You mm-hmm. are going to be sinful. You're going to make sinful choices. That mindset sticks with you even through becoming saved.
Yeah.
Original sin. Yeah. And then you're kind of, and then it's like, oh, fresh heart, fresh. And
yeah.
then you're
like,
just,
we're screwed.
We're managing.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
And so that in itself, and this is, like I said, also kind of questionable, but I was reading it the other day. Nietzsche.
Oh, no, we really
did. The God is dead guy. He actually made the statement that I agree with.
Okay.
He said,
looking
the
forward
doctrine
to this.
Of original sin holds back humanity because it makes everybody feel pity on themselves and doesn't give them motivation to do good in the world.
Yeah.
And which is, it's somewhat true. Like, we're just like, oh, I'm going to choose sin. I'm a sinful person.
Yeah.
Even after salvation, what's the point?
Yeah.
God, Jesus forgives me. Let me just do whatever.
And honestly, I think you see, this is kind of, and he got some backlash from this, but was it Bonhoeffer that talked about cheap grace?
Yeah.
Like, and there's been some pushback on that a little bit, but I think there's some, I think he's kind of alluding to the same idea that, like, people think, well, it's helpless, so I'm a sinner, but God's grace is enough.
Yeah.
And I think even Paul kind of, I think it's Paul, Peter or Paul. Paul talks about, like, you know, should we sin more so that God's grace may abound even more? No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
We need not abuse the grace of God, but the grace of God is the difference maker.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to agree with Nietzsche. And so, but here's my conduit. not conduit, my pushback is the doctrine itself what makes Christians lazy in their pursuit of holiness, or is it the presentation of that doctrine?
Maybe a
Because
little bit of
really,
both, a little both
because you
and.
could also make the argument, and I've said this before, like when you look at the once saved, always saved side of the aisle, it gives people a false assurance and maybe some lenience in how much they want to pursue holiness. Because they're like, I got my golden ticket and I'm going to lay back on that, which is not the intent of that belief, right? If you talk to any spiritual leader who believes in eternal security, once saved, always saved, they would push back on that. But practically speaking, that's what you see. But then on the the other side of the aisle, like, can you lose your salvation? What's the eternal, the other side of the eternal security, right? Can you enter in and out of right standing with God? It creates maybe some artificial fear that, oh my goodness, I'm losing it today. I'm back with Christ. Like, it creates an emphasis on maybe works because you're always trying to, but it puts holiness at a premium, right? And I think both
Works
of
and grace
those,
type thing.
it, right? And I think both of those are valuable.
Both of
Like,
them.
I don't want you to live your life in fear that God's always looking to cross you off the list. I do think there is value and there's biblical support of living secure, knowing that you're in a relationship with the God of the universe, and that God wants you to pursue holiness and not laziness. And I,
So
yeah.
that's a great segue point.
You got 3 minutes before we're out of time.
We'll send another link. It's okay. Because this is, I think this is a great point for
Okay.
people to kind of land on.
Okay.
Brings me back to what we originally said. God and Christ is not going to set us up with a goal we can't reach.
Yeah.
So if we are fully in just sinful people, we cannot choose sin, and we can spend our whole lives in conviction and guilt and shame and uncleansing and untainting the heart more than focusing on what the perfection is that we need to pursue. Because I feel like that is the Christian life, then that's a terrible life, in my opinion. Like if I live every day in a conviction, guilt, shame more than in the freedom of Christ, then that God doesn't want your mental health to be down. He wants you to understand the freedom and the power of your choices. And so he's setting us up in a way to make the choices that are going to bring us closer to him, which actually, in my opinion, will actually make us the whole concept of making us more like Christ. Like we can become, though it is possible, I guess, with the theology laid out to become like Christ.
This is a, it reminds me of when you learn driving for the first time. When you learn to drive, well, we've heard some stories from you. Maybe when you learn driving for the second, third, I actually
Yeah,
told a kid
this was
this
after I
morning.
was playing
I
driving.
told a kid this morning about your, like, yeah, I hit a deer. And the lady was like, well, I've never seen a deer that was green.
Facts. That is a that's
Oh.
facts.
Anyway, oh, he asked me an important question. What color was your Durango?
Silver.
Silver. Okay, I had gray in my head, so I couldn't remember why.
Well, yeah,
So
that's fine.
anyway, all right. When you learn to drive, we immediately look at all the places that we're not supposed to go. But it makes getting to the destination really hard and anxiety producing. Because I'm like, don't swerve off the road this way. Don't hit that car. Don't cross this double-edged line. You are anxious. You are overwhelmed. You are stressful. And I remember my driver's ed saying, don't focus on where you're not supposed to go. Look up ahead at where you're going and just go after that. And you'll miss the rest. Unless they come into your lane, basically. Focus on where you're heading, not what you're trying to not head to, right? That'd be like saying, you know what? I need to drive to California or drive to Alabama this weekend. You jump on 85, you hit Highway 20, and you drive, right? Do I need to look at every single road between here and Talladega and say, well, let me cross off all the roads I don't need to go on? That would be overwhelming. No, focus on the destination and set yourself up to get there. And I think that's exactly what you're saying. So far too often we talk about the sin, this overwhelming sin, and all we do is talk about all of these sins that we're trying to avoid. But what we fail to do is to say, just pursue Christ. And the sin takes care of its freaking self. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean we don't need to be aware, or maybe not be aware of the specific temptations that we face and make accommodations. We need not be foolish. But I think what you're saying is, but if we keep our eyes on Christ and say, what does it look like to become holy? What does it look like to become in the likeness of Christ? Pursue that.
Shout out to Reverend Marty for coming in and really bringing the heat today. We will be taking offering to Lars23 on SweetWeet at yahoo.com.
Increments of 20.
That was a great example because I really did not know how you were going to tie in drive any of that. But that's a perfect example of what I was thinking about. Like, it's a perfect metaphor for that.
It's like bowling. When all you do is think about the gutters, you hit them every time.
Here we go.
Every time. All right, I'm done.
So I need them gutter guards. I mean, look at you dropping these spot on examples right now. Because I think that's important for people to realize is I'm not necessarily wanting to attack in any way. It's not really attack. It's thinking through the doctrine of original sin. That was just the easiest aspect of it because that's what I've grew up with. And I think you're spot on in the sense of if you focus on how bad you are, and this is kind of hitting on the Reformed a little bit, I guess, but I'm totally depraved, total depravity. I'm utterly at every point of me and not worth crap. You're going to feel like you're not worth crap.
And I've literally heard this from pulpits where we just stand there and beat ourselves like a pinata.
But the reality
is, you see direct biblical commands to, yes, we need to strongly acknowledge some of the things that we have present in our life. But that should not keep us from building up one another in the faith.
Right.
Pursuing Christ in the faith. Living out, encouraging, loving, admonishing.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, we focus so much on that we lose the fact that we're made in the image of God. Like, we rob ourselves of the image that we came from. And I don't necessarily, to me, the image of God is not necessarily like, God looks like a 70-year-old, perfect white hair, perfect white beard, human man.
No.
It's more of like, we're made in the image of God because we have these things like free will, reason, logic, the fruits of the Spirit.
Peace, I was thinking, patient, love, I was thinking Morgan Freeman, but that too.
Yeah, the Morgan Freeman voice.
Because that man has not changed in 50 years.
Yeah, that's true. Or Brad Pitt. Anyway, but those are the things that we rob ourselves of. We rob ourselves of this image and these gifts that God has given us as humans, not necessarily even as Christians, but as humans, because we are still made in the image of God, saved or not saved.
Yeah.
And I think free will is a part of that. And the reason I kind of take this stance is so in counseling or when you're talking to somebody, if I'm coming from the mindset of you're screwed until you get saved,
mm-hmm.
then it's almost hopeless for them. And I get the concept of that. Well, you want it to feel hopeless. Yeah, but you're also robbing them of a truth that maybe if they see that God is in them, that they are drawn to God by the fact that
it would ignite a desire.
Right.
An awareness and a desire.
Exactly. Back to how you originally were.
Yeah.
Infants, holy, pure, you haven't been influenced. You're still sinful. There's no difference there. You still need salvation. You still need forgiveness, but you're reinstating yourself back to where God wanted you to be. Mm-hmm. And then perfection is not necessarily, I got to do all these things right, which is the whole point of Christ, which is love God with all your heart and love your neighbors yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, don't worry about all these rules and regulations and laws and all these things. Like, if you focus on these two things in these two things, mm-hmm. like, I think that Christ was implementing and, you know, saying that you can reach perfection in loving God. You can reach perfection in loving your neighbor. And having these things come out of your life brings about more motivation for me and more motivation for people that I talk to than coming from, yeah, you really need to find out what's wrong and you really need to pray about it and you really need to ask forgiveness and you got to do better.
Right.
More than
it's a total, like we talked about a few weeks ago, it's a perspective difference. Are we trying to kill what is bad, or are we trying to illuminate what is good?
Right, and it's
it's a little both.
The TED Talk, the addictions TED Talk. I think addiction.
Yeah. Example. When you illuminate what is good, the bad naturally dies.
Right. You don't need to threaten the relationship.
Yeah,
which is what he says, or the bond. You need to emphasize what
Listen,
the
you're bringing up a
underbelly.
whole new wave of thoughts here that we talked about. We're out of time. We got to wrap up.
Yeah,
These people have
but
already listened to way more of our
I know.
ponderings than they need to.
So landing on this point, if you don't hear anything
Yes.
else and you've skipped all the way through the podcast, this is what it is. You have power in your choices
Yes.
to choose God or not God. And those choices have consequences, not
Yes.
necessarily eternally, but now. And
Yeah.
so the point I was making with Charlie is sometimes we rob ourselves of life here, thinking about the life to come in
Yeah.
this set. Like, I can't wait to die. Sure. But there's so much to enjoy now.
Yeah.
But I think we've almost trained our minds to think that this life is nothing and that heaven is the real
Yeah.
gift.
We've become obsessed with this future thing that we miss out on the glory that is today.
Yes.
All right.
That's
Any other
my ending. You can probably cut
final
out
point? Any
half of
other
this.
final points, Nietzsche?
No, because it really helped me personally that I
Yeah.
wanted to work through that. And it really brought up what kind of Charlie's saying in the sense of like, because some pastors would probably amen him. Yeah, life here sucks. Like, death it
Right.
is, you know? And that's just not it,
Doesn't
dog.
have to be true.
Right. That's just not
But that
it.
also, we could go down the road though, but that's also like the world we live in doesn't have to suck. You could tell that to somebody that lives in a third world country. You live to somebody that's in overt oppression, poverty, distress. Like they may say, you can tell me this world sucks, but it kind of does. So we also have to cu culturally recognize some of those truths as well.
Yeah,
Anyway, all right, we
agreed.
got to wrap up. We're done. We'll dive into this at some other point in time.
Yeah, so make your choices.
Make your cho good choices, guys.
Make your stand in
Good
front of your tree
choices.
and make the
That's right.
choice.
All right, guys. Until next time, y'all behave yourselves.
Holla.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of TNJ. Don't forget to check out the links to any of our guests in the show description.
And check out tattoosandjesus.org for additional show information or to submit your questions, comments, or curse words.